Time is running out. We have two Pedigrees to Pups seminar weekends scheduled with your host teaming up with Dr. Marty Greer. Join us in Austin, Texas, March 27th to 29th, or Onalaska, Wisconsin, April 10th to 12th for a groundbreaking seminar that combines discussion of pedigrees and building a breeding program with down-to-earth veterinary tips on healthy whelping and raising a new litter. We have built a breeding theory and breeding hands-on seminar that creates an all-inclusive understanding of both the art and science of dog breeding. Our goal is a full-circle mentoring experience in a small group format that creates community and opportunities for conversation and connection. Our topics cover everything from the foundation bitch, basic health and structure, breeding pedigrees, to progesterone timing, semen evaluation, neonates, and so much more. Check out the events tab at puredogtalk.com for more information. We'll see you there. Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and we have a big deal conversation today, you guys. I am being joined by Dr. Charlie Garvin, who is a member of the AKC Board of Directors. He is also the chairman for the AKC Purebred Preservation Bank. And so we're going to talk about a bunch of different stuff, but I'm just excited for Charlie to join us. Okay, you guys, did you know one in every five puppies has an unexpected, expensive vet visit within the first 30 days of going home? Are all of your owners prepared? Ensure each of your new families never has to worry about an unexpected medical cost for their new loved one with Trupanion's exclusive Go Home Day Offer. Activating the Go Home Day Offer gives each family 30 days of no-cost medical insurance for their puppy, beginning as early as the day before pickup. Coverage for all new unexpected accidents and illnesses, including hereditary, congenital, and common breed-related conditions. An automatic 90% payout on all covered costs, no limits and no caps to those payouts for the lifetime of the puppy. Just side note, Trupanion paid a $23,000 claim for a puppy just last month. And the exclusive ability to pay vets directly at the time of care. This spring, put activating Trupanion's Go Home offer at the top of every one of your Go Home checklists. To start sharing your own exclusive Go Home offer with your very next litter, join Trupanion's free breeder support program by stopping by puredogtalk.com and checking out the partners page. Thank you. How are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit, we call it the 411 here, right? Give us a little bit of background on yourself, how you got into dogs, how you got to be on the board. We got lots of stuff to talk about today.
I got my first Dalmatian in 1965, and it was out of the newspaper ad.
Yes.
My older sister had taken one of our dogs through obedience and got a little trophy at graduation day. And I thought, well, that's something I'd like to do. So when we lost one of our dogs, we did some research to decide what breed would be best. We found this Dalmatian that we really didn't know anything, but we picked out one that looked good to us and started showing it obedience, went through obedience class, got a little trophy, and thought, this is really cool. So I trained her some more, went in, competed in obedience, and she was good, but not great. Would have a tendency to lose runoffs for placements. But since the confirmation shows her in the same location, we entered her there as well. And turned out she was a very good dog. And when a professional handler came by and said, "I really like to show your dog. I think you could do a lot with her." I asked him for his rate card. When I saw that it was, well, $25 a show, I thought, holy cow, that's a lot of money. I could do this myself. And so I started showing her myself and had a great deal of success with her. She ended up being the top female Dalmatian for 5 years in a row and was the top owner handled for several years. And I was 16 years old at the time. That was before owner handlers was a thing. But that really got me hooked on that. And we got another Dalmatian and bred them together. And all our dogs are some 90 champions have come from those original ones. Then with her, I also competed junior showmanship and was fortunate enough to win the finals at Westminster in junior showmanship. And that kind of made my name, if you will. Got also involved with the dog organizations. And I was showing dogs all through college and medical school. Went to medical school at University of Southern California. Continued to show dogs there. I was able, had a great deal. My parents would raise the puppies. They'd ship them out to me to show them. I'd finish them and then ship them back and get another one.
That's the kind of conveyor belt I'm talking about right there.
It was great because L.A. had very restrictive dog laws that I still do. You couldn't have more than two. So that made our competitors very jealous because they would finish the dog and still have them around for a long time. So anyway, I got involved with the dog organization. I was president of the Dalmatian Club of Southern California when I was still in medical school. And I guess learned I had some organizational talent, was president of my student body in the medical school. And then and I finished there and did a year of surgery, then came back to Ohio, where I'd grown up, and did the ophthalmology training, then moved to Marion and kept showing dogs all the time. Then got on the Dalmatian Club of America board, basically been on continuously, except for term limit years. I've been president of Dalmatian Club of America for 17 years, and also involved with the Marion Ohio Kennel Club, and have been president of that for many years. So my mother became a delegate. She was kind of a soccer mom before soccer moms existed. And she was an AKC delegate, and she was on the board of the Dalmatian Club of America. And so when I finally had a little bit of time, I became a delegate. And after 10 years of seeing the process of the delegate body, I was encouraged to run for the board of the American Kennel Club, and I was successful and just finishing up my 23rd year on the AKC board.
I was going to say, you've been on the board for a while. Give us, and we were talking about a little before we got recording, I think that a lot of our exhibitors don't have a good basic understanding of the delegate body, what they do and what the board does. Can you give us kind of a, like a recap, you know, sort of a 101?
Right. But if you think about all the dog clubs that are out there, there are some 5,000 AKC dog clubs, and about 600 of them are member clubs. That is, the American Kennel Club, as a club of clubs, has the clubs who are members. Member clubs are permitted to have a delegate to the delegate body of AKC, and the delegates meet quarterly, and they are responsible for the rules of AKC, all the rules that all the dog shows, all the judges, all the exhibitors have to follow. The AKC delegates are responsible for amending those bylaws and the dog show rules. And they also have a lot of involvement on committees. There's 11 delegate committees that range from all breed clubs to parent clubs to canine health to companion events to bylaws, dog show rule committees, and so forth. So at the quarterly meetings, there's one day of committee meetings, and then the second day is the official meeting itself. The delegates get updates from the AKC staff. They will debate various issues regarding dog show rules or bylaws. The delegates then serve as a communication conduit in both directions. Mm-hmm. That is, they can bring the concerns of their club to the delegate body. They can also, though, let the club members in their local club or their national club, or his parent sure. club, let the club members know what's happening at AKC. Now, the other main responsibility of the delegates is to elect the board of directors for AKC. And there's 13 board members, four-year terms, term limits after 2 4-year terms. So in March each year, there'll be candidates that have, for the past several months, campaigned for election, and the delegates get to elect those. Then what the board does, they review any proposed amendment to the bylaws or dog show rules that may be proposed by the delegates and will pronounce whether they are in favor or opposed to that. Right. And even if they're opposed, the delegates can override that. The board has the fiduciary responsibility of running the organization. As a $100 million corporation, yeah. it is a serious business. So a lot of the financial concerns need to be dealt with by the board. The board also elects the senior officers on a yearly basis, the C-suite officers. The board also has responsibility for the regulations, which are somewhat different than the dog show rules that can only be amended by the delegates. The regulations, and there are numerous regulations, right. every one of the some 24 sports has their own set of regulations that the board is responsible for. And the board also provides guidance to staff and, again, is a conduit for administration between the company of AKC and the delegates and the dog show fancy overall.
To me, it's really fascinating because in its own tiny, I mean, it's not tiny, but in its own way, the AKC is a representative democracy. And I
Very
think
much so.
People just don't understand that. And I think it's really, really important because you and I both know, we've been at this a minute, everybody's favorite thing to do at a dog show is complain. And so for people to understand that there is a way to take action that isn't just jacking mm-hmm. your jaws, that you can actually do something. And I think that's important.
Yeah, I think 2 points about that. First is the directors, members of the board are always very willing to listen to complaints. Even better if that complaint has a suggestion for improvement
yes.
or a solution to the problem that goes along with the complaining. Mm-hmm. The second thing to understand is when you think of all the exhibitors, all the breeders, all those that love their dogs enough to register them, everyone, all those people, we are the AKC.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to bash AKC for certain things, but they are us.
Yeah.
And so it's beneficial for everybody to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And one of the things that the delegates and the board and all the things, one of the things you do is some of these special, what do we call them? Special operations, right? So the AKC Purebred Preservation Bank, I always have to do it right, is one of those. And so talk to us about kind of how this came to be and your role in it. Let's kind of dive into that because it's a really cool project.
Almost everybody's heard about the issue of low entry breeds and declining registration. And now of the 205 breeds, 114 of those, more than 55%, are now considered low entry breeds. And for the past several years, the registration numbers have declined considerably. And so, for example, the number of breeds who had 10 or fewer litters registered throughout the year, that number doubled between 2022 and 2024. So there are some breeds that are really approaching trouble, not just numbers, but also lack of genetic diversity.
Yeah.
And so there's a need to help preserve those purebred breeds from extinction. Now, The Otterhound Club, which is a very low entry, low registration breed, found this to be a serious problem. They did something about it. Mm-hmm. And in 2017, they created their own reproductive bank, and it was very successful and has been successful producing litters for them. But several years later, no other club had been able to duplicate that. And so in 2021, the AKC board and Dennis Sprung suggested maybe AKC should step in and create the structure that every parent club could use. Every breed could benefit from that. Right. So the breeds themselves and the breed clubs would not have to go through the significant hassle of creating their own. So in 2021, the AKC board authorized the creation of the new affiliate, the AKC Purebred Preservation Bank, or PPB is the easier way to say it. And it's the fifth AKC affiliate that joins the AKC Cannon Health Foundation, AKC Reunite, AKC Humane Fund, and it's a separate 501c3 organization.
Right.
And it has its own board of directors. There are some overlap, but it is a separate organization. We have developed over the past several years, working on all the details, all the legal and financial aspects of how to make this a successful business.
Yeah.
And it is really starting to grow.
That's so cool. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, you guys, the stunning Doberman Pinscher Penny has earned a spot in history as the Best in Show winner of the 150th Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show presented by Purina ProPlan. Penny, who is fed ProPlan Sport Performance 3020 chicken and rice formula, has also etched a place in ProPlan history as number 19 of the past 20 Westminster winners fed ProPlan dog food. In 2025, Penny was one of the 96 out of 100 top show dogs fed ProPlan dog food, the top choice of owners and handlers of show dogs. To learn more about ProPlan dog food fed to show champions like Westminster winner Penny, visit purina.com/ProPlan/dogs. The rankings noted above are based on Dog News Magazine's Top 100 Dogs AKC All Breed Competition and Reserve Bests in Show through 12/31/25. Like the NPR of dogdom, Pure Dog Talk is here for you to make sense out of everyday things, to add nuance to your understanding and tools to your tech box, to bring history to life and propel the living history of purebred dogs into the future. So, serious observation. What do you guys think I hear more often than crooked judges and professional handlers win everything? I hear a continuing cry for community. So, for folks who are looking to have meaningful conversation, avoid keyboard warriors, and join a welcoming and knowledgeable group, we offer you an option. Forget about spilling the tea. Drink from a well of thoughtful and thought-provoking dog people. Pure Dog Talk patrons support the work we do here by contributing to our crowdsourcing campaign. For as little as $10 a month, you can keep the MP3s rolling here at Pure Dog Talk. You can contribute to the future of purebred dogs by building the fortunes of the Marty and Laura show. You can gain access to a private Facebook group, private After Dark Zoom room, and private Laura Unleashed podcast episodes. Even your own Pure Dog Talk digital badge. Visit puredogtalk.com/patron to find out how you can join the best community in dogs. Listeners of the podcast will know I had Joelle and Gregory on when they made the Otterhound Reproductive Bank. I love that story. And Dr. Greer, who's frequently on the podcast, has talked sort of in passing about the PPB. But I wanted to talk to you specifically because A, you're in charge of it, and B, to give people a really deep understanding of what it is, why it is, and how they can participate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The underlying principle is there are dogs out there that have frozen semen that is in storage right now. And many of the owners, in fact, probably all of the owners, are going to get old and they will eventually no longer be with us. What's going to happen to that semen? In most cases, unless they have children or grandchildren or some mentee that they've really worked with, in many cases, that semen gets thrown away, basically. The heirs are not really interested in it. They're really not interested in paying the bill for continued storage.
What do you mean I have a bill for semen? I mean.
Right. And so one way to help is to make a bequest to donate that in your will to PPB. And we have forms on the website that can help with that, help the lawyers who may not know anything about frozen semen, help them to make it easier for them. Dogs that are still living, you don't have to wait till you die to make that donation. If you're getting out of the breeding business, as many people do as they get older, you can make that donation at any time, and PPB will then take over paying the bills for that.
Okay, so you don't have to move it. That's one of the questions I've had. Mm-hmm. So, for example, my partner has a pug dog stored with Dr. Greer, okay? And say he decides to donate that to the PPB. It just stays there, right? And AKC takes over paying the bill. That's what you're saying.
It depends on the individual storage facility. Okay. We have some criteria. We want to make sure that storage facility is going to be reliable, that they have mechanisms in place that ensure that that is going to be around and stored forever. So in some cases, we'll just leave it there and take over paying the bills. In other cases, if that storage facility doesn't meet our standards, we will move that at PPB's expense to a more central storage facility. And we have no more than a dozen storage facilities across the country that we deal with, but we're always looking for more. Mm-hmm. And we can work with them to negotiate a discount, if possible, as well as making sure that they follow our procedures, and also working with them so that they can perhaps change some of their documents. Mm-hmm. So the original donation agreement, usually they have some language that says, if you don't pay your bills, we're going to throw it away, or we'll donate it somewhere. We'd like them to add language that says, we will donate this to PPB if it becomes necessary.
So that you can get that in as soon as you freeze it, you've signed that, and that's where it goes unless other arrangements are made?
Correct.
Nice. Yes. That's good. Yeah. And again, I've had this conversation many times with many people, so I'm just going to keep using the same example because it's a good... Let's just say I donate this semen, my partner donates the semen to PPB, and then my most hated rival decides they're going to use it, right? Like people just are like, no, I can't, no, bleh. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, that is clearly the biggest hurdle that we run into. There are several things with this. First of all, PPB is not in the business of competing with active breeders. And it's a totally different mindset. We need to be focused on what's going to happen 25, 50, 100 years from now. Whereas breeders today, you know, you're planning a year or two ahead. You're going to design this breeding that's going to work out very well, and you're going to be able to win the national specialty in a couple years. The goal here is different. If the breed is in trouble, if they have severely dwindled numbers, if there's some disease that has run rampant through the breed, or there's a severe lack of genetic diversity, if the breed needs to be reconstituted, that's where PPB comes in. So realistically, in 50 years from now, your rival is not likely to be around. And people really won't care at that point who likes who or who didn't like who. The other point about that is, and we know some breeds, for example, there'll be different serious type differences, say from field dogs to bench champion dogs. And you may not want to mix them today. But if your breed is in trouble, first of all, is your line good enough to be helpful for reconstituting your breed? I mean, obviously, most breeders think their line's pretty darn good. They've worked for years to make it really good. Is it good enough to rebuild the breed if it needs to? The second part of that is, say you have one of the types of breeds that's on one side of fence and isn't these days interbred with the other side of the fence. If the breed's in trouble and it's going to be reconstituted, which side of the fence would you want the semen to come from to reconstitute that breed? Most likely you're going to want your side of the fence to be the one that is used for that. It can only be used if you've made the donation to PPB so that semen is available.
Well, and genetic diversity. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, but I think it's so important. And I think this is something people miss. In my breed, I have German Wirehair pointers. So I have the ability to reach out to a line of dogs that isn't necessarily well represented in the show line, right? Or what have you, either way. And it works out really well. I think that the genetic diversity, they talk about you want to have two different line bred lines. Well, how about you've got a field dog and a show dog? You have two completely different pedigrees that when you are able to bring them together, you've created more genetic diversity. But sorry, that's sort of a tangent, but I think it's really important that people understand, you know, World War II, think about World War II. How many of our breeds today were reconstituted, redeveloped, rebuilt from five, six individual animals at the end of
World War II? And the other point about that is, since genetic diversity is important and our understanding of the importance is increasing, it's not necessarily the top super show dog that needs to be collected, but a appropriately bred companion animal or performance animal may be very acceptable to improve the genetic diversity of the breed.
Exactly. And so I think once you get to that point, then you start understanding this isn't for today. This is for 50 or 100 years from now. And World War III has happened and there's one bitch left in Dalmatians and you really just need something to breed or two, right? So what sorts of, I guess, paperwork, what's the process that people need to go through? How do they say they want to do this? What's the actual steps on the ground?
Right. So you're thinking about donating the frozen semen that you've already collected and is in a freezer. The person who went to get to know is Susan Myers, who is the program manager for PPB, and she's the one who does all the dirty work. But if you go to our website, which is akcppb.org,
and we will
it
have
has a
link
lot of information.
In the show notes, you guys. There will be a link so you can click it in the show notes.
Good. It has a drop-down box for donor information, and it takes you step by step as to what's involved. Basically, there's an application form that has got a couple parts to it. We want to know about the basics of that donation, who the sire is, obviously their name, their registered number, but the specifics, have they been used before? What did they produce? How many litters have they had? Have they had frozen semen used before and was it successful? What is the health status of that dog? Do they have a chick number? Do they have OFA tests? Then another part is the so-called parameters. PPB invites every parent club to provide us information about breed-specific questions that should be asked of the donor, both the sire and the semen itself, mm-hmm. are there specific colors that need to be noted? Are there specific diseases that need to be asked about? Mm-hmm. And the parent clubs can provide this information for us. And the basic application is a downloadable PDF fillable form that makes life easy. But there are some questions that may be a little difficult to answer. We can query the AKC database to find out all the progeny that have been registered. Nice. From them, because some people's records are better than others. And if you've had a sire that's been used frequently, you frequently may lose track of some of the puppies that were produced. Mm-hmm. We also will query the OFA database mm-hmm. to see what tests have been done. And just a side note, we recognize that there's so many different levels of quality of information about the semen. The semen without any information at all is not valuable, but there's going to be some where the sire has taken all of the tests that have been requested or required by the parent club and passed them all, and that's great. But there'll be others that took only some of the tests, not others, or some that did not pass some of the tests.
Predate.
Correct. There'll be some where the test wasn't available 20 years ago.
Right.
So at this stage, we're welcoming almost every donation, but then be much more discriminatory when it comes to on the distribution side.
Sure.
Again, we request the parent club to provide criteria for us for the proposed bitch for the breeding, but also for the breeder itself. That is, you may not necessarily want a first-time breeder using the last straw that is stored on that breed. So the breed and the bitch, you probably don't want the bitch to be too young or too old. Okay. Now, that's going to vary a lot from breed to breed. And that's
and
where
you
the
have that
parent club comes in handy.
All of the parent clubs so far?
No.
No. This is why I'm asking you the question, because I thought that was the answer. So a shout out to all of our parent club people. Hear what Charlie has to say.
And try to make it as easy as possible for the parent clubs to come up with their parameters. And we recognize that it can be very difficult for a parent club to come to consensus on anything, much less something like this. But we have samples that other parent clubs have made of their parameters. We've created a imaginary breed, the mythical rare hund, that has its own set of parameters that they can use. We just recently developed a checklist that gives you things to think about. It's not a mandate. It's not a requirement. But thinking about, do you want the breeder to have bred a certain number of litters or campaign dogs to their championship, certain level experience? Do you want them to be a parent club member? Mm-hmm. Now, recognize that if the breed is dwindling in numbers, probably the parent club is dwindling as well and may not be functional. And that's where these parameters can be developed now, so that 25 years from now, even if the parent club no longer exists, the concept and the philosophy of the current parent club will be implemented by PPB when the time comes for distribution. And this is also where parent clubs or breeders may be concerned about, gosh, who's going to use this semen? We certainly wouldn't want a high-volume breeder to use it. Mm-hmm. Well, if the breed is dwindling, realistically, there's probably not any high-volume breeders out there. But if there are certain types of breeders or certain characteristics of the breeder that would not be appropriate for use, if you can come up with a good definition of that, mm-hmm. describe what it is about the potential breeder that you don't want. And if one of those things is, I don't like Mary Doe, and I don't want her to use the semen, that realistically
is not
appropriate.
Sorry to go off on another tangent. Those of you listeners know I have a bad habit of this. But your statement just now about the parent clubs not existing 50 years from now, it just kind of kicked me a little bit in my gut, you know, mm-hmm. that these are the kind of things that you guys are talking about and kind of gaming out. Mm-hmm. I think that is just a real serious gut check for people, you know, like, this is real, y'all.
Right. And even on the more small side, individuals usually don't like to think about their eventual death that is going to come to all of us and what's going to happen after they're no longer alive. And this is a way to try to keep the thing that most of us really love, their own dear breed or breeds, to keep those breeds alive long, long, long term.
That is amazing. All right, Charlie, thank you so much. Listeners, we will have all kinds of links and information. You can follow up in the show notes. And so I wish you guys the best. I think this is a really important project, and I'm glad you guys pushed it forward.
The other thing I would like to mention is we are always willing to listen to suggestions. Mm-hmm. How can we do better? Mm-hmm. If you don't like some of our answers to our questions, or if there are ways we can improve certain forms, let us know. Mm-hmm. Or if your club has questions, we can arrange presentations for you, Zoom meetings with your board or committee or membership. Mm-hmm. And we're happy to do that if we can work out the timing and the scheduling of that. Feel free to communicate with us. If you just are thinking about it, feel free to contact Susan or me, and we'll get the information that you need.
That is amazing. Thank you, Charlie. Thanks for all the work you're doing. Thanks for all your time you've devoted to the breeds and to the club. So we appreciate you.
Well, you're certainly welcome, and thank you for having me on this podcast.
All right, you guys, I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health, whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough. This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life, you know, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.